Hello and welcome along. It's Andy, your host on this here podcast. Well, here we are, episode 4. This one is a volunteer. Somebody actually put themselves forward for it, so I'm very pleased, really, that we seem to be gaining a little bit of traction and people are, you know, looking to get involved, and I'm so pleased that they are. Similarly, if you'd like to be involved, you're a wedding professional, please do get in touch. Andy@jibstv.com on the email, jibztv.com. Or contact me via Facebook, Instagram, but more preferably Facebook Messenger, if you like. Keen to have anybody along that would like to take part. All that being said, let's crack on and speak to DJ MK from MK Roadshow. Here we are then, episode 4, and my first guest who stuck his hand up and said, yeah, I'll be part of that, thank you very much, which is very nice. Thank you, and welcome, Mr. Kunal, DJ MK from the MK Roadshow. How you doing, man?
Thank you very much, Andy. Yeah, perfectly fine. Excited to have you here.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, it's it seems to be going well, and I'm pleased. So I was doing a bit of research on you, and it turns out that you've got a degree in mechanical engineering.
Yeah, I have.
Okay, so talk to me about the the transition from mechanical engineering into rounded entertainer.
Do you know what? It was one of those things. I mean, when I was growing up, I always had a passion, and I think it was something that I put on my social media the other day, actually. I put something very, like, really random. I put, like, random facts about me, and I put something where, if I wasn't a musician or into music, I'd be an archaeologist.
Yeah.
And that was something I wanted to do. And then that kind of led me on to thinking, well, I can do music. And obviously I come from a musical background, but I also want to keep something where, as like a backup.
Okay.
And engineering was actually one of those things that all my friends around me were doing.
Yeah.
And I just chose it. I thought, okay, let me do that as well. So it was kind of a backup thing for me.
Right.
I did work in that field a few years ago, well, quite a long time ago, actually. It just wasn't for me. And I just thought to myself, do you know what? I'm not cut out for this. You know, I'm a born entertainer. I enjoy it when I'm on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it was just something that I chose from the two. And I thought, let me just continue with the music.
But how did you actually morph yourself into it, because it's not an easy business to get into.
No.
So how did you, where were your roots, let's say, for, you know, getting a van full of equipment and you know, going to a wedding? And, you know, what was your very first wedding, for instance?
My very first wedding was actually when I was about 3 or 4 years old, I think.
Okay.
I've just seen the VHS you know, taped to that a few years ago, actually.
Yeah.
And my family come from, like, a musical background. So my mom's a professional singer.
Okay.
So she's been in the industry for quite a while. She does projects in India and obviously projects here in the UK as well.
Okay.
For obviously quite a long time. So I guess my sort of musical inspiration has come from there.
Yeah.
I've then, you know, performed at many weddings when I was young. Apparently I used to play the drum there. I used to sing. And there was one very memorable one where I was singing. I think it was a small restaurant or something where I think I ranked about £150 in tips just singing. And that's, you know, that's when my mom kind of knew, and obviously my parents knew at the time, was that, you know, this guy's talented, we've got to do something about it.
Sure. Okay.
And then I began performing at, you know, local community events. Mm-hmm. Started singing, and then the events I was doing, you know, sort of with my mom, she used to sing, and then people used to come up saying, okay, could you put some, like, dancey music on now? And my mom used to be like, okay, we've got this tape, just stick it on. And back in the day, it was those TDK cassettes.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to stick them on, and people were dancing. And I was like, this is great. You get paid to play music.
Yeah, yeah.
This is fantastic. So why not continue that? So, yeah, I just felt like, you know, this is for me, and I'm more suited to it. So then when I turned out to legal age around 18, I thought, let me just start the business. So, you know, I registered it, got down doing it. Of course, it was difficult. The first couple of years were very difficult.
Yeah.
because I was on my own.
Okay.
And I always said to myself, I don't want to carry anyone else's name. I want to make my own name in the industry.
Yeah.
And I want to do it myself. And okay. That's the way I've sort of carried it on, because, you know, there's things like nepotism out there now where, you know, this person's son or this person's daughter, because they're well known, are then going to make it in the industry with their contacts. And
yeah.
That's something I didn't want to do.
Is your mum a well-known name in entertainment then?
So yeah,
you,
so
you
she's,
said that, you know, yeah. she's... she's had her own career path as well herself.
Yeah, she's had her own career path. So she's obviously, you know, done a lot of, you know, musical, you know, records. She's obviously performed with artists and still performs to this day.
Okay.
I actually had an opportunity because of her to actually perform with the legendary Asha Bhosle.
Okay.
Who a lot of people know, like Brimful of Ashes, obviously dedicated for her. So this was on India's 50th anniversary that they had. It was a big festival in Cannon Hall Park, actually, in Birmingham.
Yeah.
That's where she came for the first time. And I was only 8 at the time.
Wow.
So, you know, it was a big thing. So I've rubbed shoulders with some of the, you know, some famous people. And that's, again, been my inspiration for where I am now. I guess if I didn't have those kind of opportunities or that kind of a background, I wouldn't be where I am. So I'm not just someone who has kind of woken up one day and thought, I want to be a DJ.
Sure.
It's not been like that. It's been a gradual process. And I've learned the skill, I've gone for lessons, I've been classically trained for singing.
Okay.
I've had lessons on the Dall.
Yeah.
You know, and then obviously watched, you know, videos on YouTube and stuff as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've seen you, I mean, we've not worked that much together, I've got to say. I mean, comparative with Amar from Make It Real, he sort of said, you know, I must have shot 50 weddings with him. And probably by comparison, we've maybe worked together 5 to 10 times probably across all the years I've been doing it. But whenever you turn up and whenever you're there, it's the full package, isn't it? It's DJ, it's host, it's Dall player, it's vocalist, it's just everything. Yeah. And you sort of seem to cover all bases. So how challenging is that to provide for customers, and do customers always want everything? Or do you just sort of give everything because that's your in your DNA?
It's a very good question. I think when customers hear MK Roadshow, they automatically assume that, you know, it's singing, DJ, Dall, it's the full package.
Okay.
And that's how I wanted to portray my business right from the start. You know, if people come to me and they're looking for a standard DJ, you know, basicist setup, I'm like, look, I'm probably not the right person to go to. We can do it, but it's not something that I enjoy.
Yeah.
My heart and soul is in the live performance, and even our strapline is DJ and live entertainment.
Yeah.
For weddings and events. And that's how I wanted to kind of keep it. So I think 90% of our clients now, who book me, even a regular clients and new clientele, are always saying for the extra services like the DJ and the singing and the hosting. And even last night I was on a Zoom call. We're actually doing a wedding in Seville in 3 weeks' time.
Very nice.
And again, it's the full service. It's the DJ, it's the hosting, I'm hosting dance performances, you know, the singing during the mehndi and the canapes, and then playing the Dall for the groom's arrival into the mandap.
Yeah.
So it's all these things. So, you know, I guess it's like a one-stop shop for people who want that, and it saves them, you know, having to book 2 or 3 different artists.
Yeah, absolutely it does. So for your wedding that you've got coming up in Seville, for instance, how do you logistically go about that? Are you driving down with a sprinter full of gear, or is it all provided? How do you go on about arranging something like that?
So for overseas weddings, obviously, as you know, logistically, it can be quite difficult to take these kind of things. And obviously, with the prices going up for everything, you know, the cost of taking a ferry down nowadays is about £2,000-£3,000.
Wow.
So it can be quite a bit.
Yeah.
So what we do is we kind of make contacts in all these different regions with local AV companies. Or if the client knows someone, then, you know, we tend to hire stuff in resort. What myself and my colleague who works with me full time is, you know, DJ KS, obviously works with me full time as well. We take our laptops, we take our DJ controllers, a couple of mics.
Yeah.
And that's it. We're good to go.
Okay.
So it's just a speaker system, maybe like some lighting, and that's it. So that you know, there's things that are available everywhere.
So you can just sort of spec up what you actually need, and it will be provided for you
Exactly. So it makes things easier. It's obviously easier for a client as well, because we've just got to basically get on the flight, get there and begin performing.
Yeah. And isn't it a privilege? You know, I've said that, I think, talking to Gervia, Johal, you know, the sort of job that we do where people will pay us to fly abroad to exotic locations and provide our services, I think, is just such a privilege for us to do.
100%, totally agree. I mean, it's something that I never had envisaged, but in 2013, actually, I broke the international market. And it was just an event that I got booked for in Barcelona. It was actually the Miss India Europe grand finale.
Okay.
That we did, which was a big thing for me because it was aired on TV.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of people who came there who were from overseas, like, you know, different places like Madrid and Seville, Malaga. And then I've just been performing since then. And Malaga, I've been doing the festival since 2008, actually. So
really?
Quite a long time there.
How does that impact on your home life? I mean, you do have children. You've got children.
I've got two kids, yeah.
So, you know, wife and kids sat at home. You're off on a jolly to Seville or Ibiza or somewhere. How important then is the support of wife and family when you're off across the globe doing this and that?
Support is very, very, very important. I think that's the first thing you've got to kind of look at is balancing work life and home life.
Yeah.
Especially when I've got two very young kids. I mean, they're only 2 and 4.
Yeah.
One of them is a proper daddy's boy. So like he wouldn't even sleep without me, even eating is like, no, I want daddy here next to me.
Okay.
It is difficult, but I guess the advantage that I've got is I don't have to work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
So I'm not away all the time.
Yeah.
For example, if I'm going to Seville, we're leaving on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm back home on a Monday.
Yeah.
And then I've got Monday to Friday, essentially, yeah, with the kids.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so it's one of those things where you just kind of have to have that balance. If I was working full time as well and doing this business, I don't think I'd have a life at all.
Mm. Do you think the horrible term Brexit, do you think Brexit has impacted those international, those destination shoots at all? In terms of travel and carnets or bits of paper that you might need to go and work in these places, where before we could just go and film in France or Italy or wherever. These days, you know, we need equipment lists or carnets or all sorts of bits and pieces. Has that impacted you at all?
I think from the entertainment business side, I don't think it really has. I don't think Brexit's really affected it at the minute. I mean, I've heard about Spain possibly, you know, putting in this visa application thing every time you go. That's something you'll have, you know, have to apply for. At the minute, nothing like that's come in.
Yeah.
The only kind of big impact we had is obviously, you know, the dreaded C word, COVID, yeah, which was a big impact for us because there were restrictions in place. We had restrictions here, and then in Spain it was crazy. I mean, people were still wearing masks when we weren't. So as soon as you kind of got to resort, you know, in the taxi you'd have to wear masks, and then even in the resort you'd have to see what you know there was a lot of things where you know COVID had impacted our business as well at the same time.
And how long did you go without actually working during COVID? Because I've said time and time again, I went 14 months without actually filming a single frame through COVID. So how did COVID actually impact your business?
It was about a year and a half for us as well, I reckon.
Really?
So we started getting the influx of cancellations, reschedules, and then obviously there just wasn't no clear light at the end of the tunnel as to when, you know, lockdown would be lifted. So a lot of events did get affected. Obviously, with me being full time in this business, I had to kind of, you know, look into so many different aspects, thinking to myself, well, you know, do I need to pack this in? Do I need to maybe get a full-time job?
Yeah.
You know, I'm having to refund clients because obviously if their event isn't going ahead, if they're cancelling, then, you know, it's not their fault, essentially. Yeah. But then I'm also losing out because I've initially had to fork out, you know, for staff wages and booking vans. And of course, there's overheads as well.
Yeah.
So it was a huge impact. But I think luckily, you know, once we got over that sort of year and a half phase, things started to go like ballistic. I think you'll probably agree with me that the first year back after lockdown was absolutely mental. I think we did about 220 weddings just that year.
Really?
It was mental from March onwards when it opened. It was crazy.
And how do you keep those enthusiasm levels up? And speaking personally, if I'm filming wedding, sort of 4 or 5 days on the trot, which can, during July and August, it can quite easily happen. I think it's difficult to maintain that creativity that I need to be demonstrating for my clients. So how do you keep your enthusiasm levels up and battle against the tiredness of maybe finishing at 1 a.m. in one venue and having to be somewhere else at, you know, the other end of the country at 8 a.m. the next day? How do you keep that energy level up?
That's another good question, Andy. I reckon all of us in this in the hospitality sector, you know, it's something that we deal with on a daily basis. You know, late nights, early mornings, and I mean, I was just having a conversation the other day with my colleague, and we were just saying, look, you know, we're absolutely back to back, and we're sort of chocker in the summer. We've got a wedding in the morning, a reception in the evening, and then the next day, you know, last week I was in Yorkshire. From Yorkshire, we came to Birmingham. From Birmingham to Sussex, and then we had another one in Leicester. So it's just back to back, but. What motivates us, I think, is the fact that we're going to go there, we're going to do a great job. And I think at the end of the day, it's serving the client and doing what we love. If the passion wasn't there, if we didn't enjoy what we did, there'd be no motivation. Yeah. I think that's the key to any business. You know, you've got to enjoy it. Of course, there are days when we don't even sleep. Sometimes we've slept in a van in a car park of a venue because, you know, we've come from one to the other and it's not worthwhile to get a hotel for 2 hours.
Yeah.
We've done that. But we're in work mode. As soon as we get there, we're enjoying it. And I think just the main sort of thing about motivating yourself is, you know, just keep yourself hydrated throughout the day as well.
It's funny, actually, because I find the same. I can be dog tired. And then, you know, somebody will say, okay, right, you know, bride and groom are coming in 3 minutes or whatever. Yeah. DJs do this. We've just heard that the bride and groom are on their way and it's going to be 20 minutes in reality, but so thank
very
you
true.
For that.
Very true.
But you know, when I step up to the camera crane and hit record, energy just comes from somewhere and I don't know where it comes from. I think it's just, you know, you do find it.
You do.
Okay. So MK Roadshow, is that a stepping stone to something bigger and better, or are you content with, weddings?
I think we're always looking to become bigger and better. You know, end of the day, if I look back at myself 5 years ago, we were completely different. Our setups were different. The kind of, I won't say service was different because I was still kind of singing and playing Dawl and DJing. Mm. But you're always trying to become bigger and better and kind of be sort of matching your contenders and people in the industry.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking at doing that. And I've always said to myself, and you'll probably laugh at this, Andy, but I want to kind of retire when I'm 40.
Okay.
I've got 5 years to go.
Okay.
And when I mean retire,
but
it's like...
you only look 17.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I did get ID'd to buy Calpol the other day.
Really? That's very good.
I mean, it's not even...
Even with a beard?
even with a beard, mate. You'll be very surprised. It was, in quite a well-known supermarket as well.
Brilliant.
I should put that up on my social media as well. I reckon it's one of those things that you're always trying to become bigger and better.
Yeah.
But I don't want that to... kind of have an impact on the quality now and the kind of service that I'm giving. I reckon, and I've always said, it's not always down to having the biggest setups, the best looking setups. It's down to the service. It's always down to, you know, having a great DJ. I mean, at the end of the day, there's so many companies out there who are doing these amazing setups, but then I hear from bride and grooms every single day that the music wasn't on point. You know, it wasn't what they wanted. And sometimes we end up doing, like, say, the pre-wedding. And another big DJ ends up doing the reception.
Yeah.
And we always get the feedback saying, well, actually, our guests were saying they preferred the music at the minute. And I'm like, well, why is that? What had happened on the day? And just like, you know, it wasn't as good as what you guys do. And I'm always thinking to myself, well, if that's the case, and if that's the kind of feedback that we're getting, what do I need to really improve on? And I think what I really need to improve on is just the fact that we're sort of matching the kind of setups that these new DJs are having. And that's it, really, and then we can get on that particular level.
So the investment in massive LED screens and maybe a bigger PA and rigging and all that thing, is that something that you are aiming to do or not?
Andy, if I'm thinking of retiring at 40, that's probably not something that I'm looking at doing.
Yeah.
However, there are amazing AV companies out there who you can literally call and they'll come and set up and do that. And I'm always a firm believer of supporting local businesses and other businesses.
Yeah.
The thing is, of course, I could buy a big LED screen.
Yeah.
I could buy my own dance floor.
Okay.
I could buy my own rig. But again, a good point made by yourself. You need the manpower. You're going to need all the staffing. You need all the vans, all the transits, everything like that.
Hmm.
I just think at this time, I'm quite happy and content with the way my business is going.
Yeah.
In terms of the service that we're providing.
Okay.
Setups is not a problem at all, because like I said, there's amazing companies out there who will do the setups for you.
Yeah.
And I think right now I'm at this stage where, and do you know what, essentially, Andy, it also comes down to the fact of budgets, like what the client can actually afford.
Yeah.
In this day and age with the rising costs, you know, you're speaking to a lot of bride and grooms nowadays saying, look, you know, this is our budget. This is the max we can go to. Or, you know, we just want to go for a basic setup, but we want great music. We want good music. We don't really care about the setup. We just want good music.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I'm more than happy to do that.
Do you, sorry to interrupt there, but have you found that since COVID, brides and grooms have wound back the amount of money they're spending on a wedding?
It's kind of working both ways, Andy. It's kind of being like, you know, some people are a bit more conscious about maybe spending that little extra on the house or maybe like a honeymoon as opposed to the actual wedding itself.
Yeah.
And a lot of bride and grooms are saying, and I'm being quite honest with them, I'm saying, look, if you don't need those uplighters at that venue, just save your money.
Yeah.
Save that £200-300 and put it towards something else.
Yeah.
Or if you don't need this in particular, then if you for example, you're playing a lot of marquees where LED screen would be just silly to have because of the height. It'd probably be hidden by the head table or probably by the DJ. I'm like, well, save you £1,000 or £2,000 and put it towards something else. They're always like, yeah, that's a great point, because we were actually looking to buy a house.
Hmm.
So there's that side of things. But then there's also the other side where people have saved up all this money during COVID.
Sure.
The people that are working from home or getting paid, who then want to spend it and do a big lavish wedding.
Yeah.
I mean, the one I did in Turkey, was it last June? Their budget was around £300,000. So, you know, they flew out all their guests, and £100,000 of that was just on the accommodation.
Wow, that's good.
So it was a big, big setup.
Yeah. In your sort of sector, like you've sort of already alluded to, there's lots of DJs, there's lots of AV companies, there's lots of setups. Within your sector of the industry, is there anybody that actually inspires you to do bigger and better, or do you not pay attention to what other DJs and entertainers are doing?
It's a bit of both for me. I mean, sometimes I try not to pay attention because I'm like, well, look, what we're doing is great. People are liking it. We're getting the bookings. I mean, I've got 3 Saturdays left for the whole year this year. And I'm thinking, if I was doing something wrong, it wouldn't
fair
be the
point.
Case.
Yeah.
But it's always good to see what others are doing, because it's not that you want to copy them, but you kind of want to get inspired by their journey.
Yeah.
I mean, I recently saw a DJ who shared a post saying, look, 10 years ago, my setup was like this. It was a table and 2 flame lights. We had the flames.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had like a couple of moving heads, which had to be hired in because we couldn't afford it at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, you know, the guy's got a big LED screen. He's got, you know, the fireworks, you know, in-house, everything.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to see that journey. And I'm thinking to myself, well, we've had a similar journey, kind of looking back at what we've done.
Yeah.
And even setup-wise, I mean, you know, having a look at what other DJs, you know, what other DJs are doing, it's, you know, it's always great because, you know, it kind of keeps you on your toes.
Mm.
And I reckon that's quite important.
How do you find venues? Are most venues DJ-friendly, or are there occasional times where you'll turn up and, I kind of sometimes think there are some venues where we're treated like third-rate citizens, and some venues will actually put obstacles in your way rather than try and work with you. So what's your thoughts on that?
I totally agree with that. You know, it's just a variety. I mean, you know, we'd get to some venues where they're just so nice. They're like, oh, you can park here, you can offload here, and you can use our lift.
Yeah.
And they're just so accommodating. And then, of course, you've got that sort of 20-30% for us, where they're very difficult to work with. But you know what? I've been in the industry for too long, and I just say it as it is. I'm just like, look, you know, we're here to do a job.
Yeah.
We're here to serve our client just like you are.
Yeah.
You know, just make it easy for us and easy for yourself, so then we can get on with the job, we can get it done.
Yeah.
And we can provide the best service.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're just helping each other here, you know. And there, you know, of course there are obstacles, like, you know, the lift is only for disability access. We've got to get to second floor. and the clients then booked an LED screen, a dance floor, you know, plasmas or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So sometimes it needs to be handled.
I've done those loads back in the 80s when I was roadieing, and you arrive at a venue and there's, you know, four flights of stairs to get up with a PA system, and you think, oh no.
Exactly. So the obstacle's always going to be there, but I reckon we always come,
across that. So. When was the first time that you sort of got to the end of a booking and sat back, or you're in the van on the way home and you just think, yeah, we you know, that was it, we've arrived, this is the big time?
As in before an event or after an event?
No, I think after you're, when you're sort of leaving an event, yeah. And you know you're in the van on the way home, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, that was mega, we smashed that. You know, can you remember the first time that you had that feeling, or has that always been, you know, in you?
Do you know what, Andy? We probably do that after every event. We probably do that because that's our motivation.
Yeah,
that's us saying. And even if my colleague's done like an event himself.
Yeah.
Or say if I've known one on my own. Yeah. I always tell him to always think positively. You know, always say to yourself, "Yeah, I smashed that. I'm great at what I do."
Yeah.
And because that's what's going to motivate you for the next one.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, we make sure that the event went perfectly fine. I mean, our social media speaks for itself. You know, we put videos up all the time. Mm-hmm. Events turn into raves and people love it. You know, they sing along, they're dancing, and then, you know, they're absolutely having a great time. So I feel after every event that we've smashed it, and that's the way every supplier should be thinking.
Conversely, there have to be occasions, I guess, where you come out and think, really? Is that, you know, is that as good as it's going to get?
I mean, there's always areas for improvement. You know, we did have one event where, you know, one of the photos on the LED screen wasn't the right way around.
Okay.
It was the wrong way around. Obviously, that was reasons beyond us. Obviously, you know, the photos were sent last minute, and the software for the LED screen wasn't sorting the picture out in a particular way.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always things like that, or maybe like a blown speaker that we have to then go from the van, because we keep spares in our van anyway.
Okay.
But there's always situations that you can sort out, you can resolve. Okay. But of course, there are times at the end of a end of a gig where you might just say, you know what, that could have been a bit better.
Yeah.
Or we could have been a bit better, but next time we'll make sure. But regardless of that, it was still a great gig.
But I think it's the way that you overcome adversity, probably. Of course. You know, that is very telling in that. Your social media is obviously crucially important for you, and you're always there. Is posting on social media for your own ego, or is it to attract clientele, or what's the point of social media?
I reckon it's a bit of both. I reckon it's a bit of both, being very, very honest and truthful with you.
Yeah.
Of course, we want to attract new clientele. We're always telling people, look, give us a follow on Instagram, have a look at what we're doing, follow our journey. And I'm a firm believer of out of sight, out of mind.
Okay, yeah.
You know, if you're not showing what you're doing, I mean, there's some fantastic people out there. There's some great leaders and great people who are great suppliers, but they don't put out what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I recently saw a post, someone saying, well, we've done five events back to back, and then they literally post one picture of a dance floor.
Mm.
And I'm like, but, you know, tell people, show people your journey. And nowadays what I'm doing is I'm doing a lot of BTS. I'm doing a lot of behind the scenes, because that's what it's about now.
Yeah.
And I even asked that question on my social media before, saying, what would you guys like to see? And, you know,
I think that's part of the point of this pod. It's the behind the scenes and just satisfying people's curiosity about what gets us up in the morning and what drives us to go and do what we do. Tell me about that one job that sticks in your mind that you look back and you just think, you know what, that's amazing. We've arrived. This is, you know, MK Roadshow. Boom.
I think that was probably most recently back in November last year when I got booked to DJ in India.
Okay.
That was a big thing for my career because, of course, we do these European countries. And, you know, Europe I've been doing since 2008. There's nothing new with going to Spain or something. But I think going across the planet to a completely different place, completely, you know, and I hadn't been to India for 15 years.
Okay.
For me to have gone back to where I was kind of not brought up, but I grew up kind of, you know, in the younger days. I spent in Rajkot in Gujarat.
Okay.
And that's where the wedding was. So I'm thinking to myself, wow, I'm here. back after 15 years, but I'm also performing at a wedding and I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm singing, I'm DJing, I'm playing the doll. I think that was a massive highlight of my career. And even now to date, it's something that I always think back to. And I just think, you know, it's something where, you know, I've actually achieved something in life and I'm actually being known for what I want to be known.
Yeah, so in future years, that couple themselves will probably look back on that event and think, do you know what, that was the most amazing day of our lives or the most amazing week of our lives. And you know, it's nice to leave that behind, I think, which is a basic human need, I think. Any unfulfilled ambitions for MK Roadshow, other than to retire by the time you're 40?
I think for me, I've always had that dream where I wanted to kind of take my singing to a different level.
Okay.
As in maybe sing for like Bollywood movies or maybe be like a playback singer or and I think that's one of my dreams that at the minute it's hasn't been accomplished. So I think that might be. So I think it's more of a personal thing, Andy, as opposed to it being for the road show from the DJ side of things.
How would you go about making that happen?
Well, I've written my own songs. I've actually composed my own music. Okay. I write songs as well. So like this was going back maybe 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
I just haven't had the chance to sit and go, you know, go into a studio and record them or do anything. So, you know, if anyone's listening to this, I'd love for them to get in touch if they're a producer or someone who wants to kind of collaborate. I'll be more than interested with that.
Brilliant. So the one question I'm asking everybody at the end is this. If I could magically give you the talent and the tools and the equipment to do any other job within the wedding industry, and you can't say the same thing that you're doing now, what job would you do?
Oh, that's a very, very tough one, to be honest, because I'm always looking back at people like yourselves who are, you know, doing videography or, you know, with your jib, with your crane and stuff. And I'm thinking, would I really want to do that job? And I'm thinking, well, after this event, my job isn't finished. Like, you know, with what I'm doing now, it's like I'm done and dusted after this. I can move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Decor's a bit of a headache, I think, just going through everything with the clients, and it's very, very bespoke and very sort of specific to that client. Catering isn't something that I've been interested in. So I think it's a tough one. I know you've said not to choose what you know, sort of this part, but I reckon for me it could just be maybe like a Toastmaster or maybe just hosting or something like that.
Okay.
That's
a bit of a cop-out answer, I think. I mean,
it is, but that's the thing. I'm quite happy and content where I am.
That's good.
I don't really think there's anything else that I would really want to do. I mean, people do approach us about car hire or about decor, and I'm just very straightforward. I'm just like, look.
Car hire?
Really?
Yeah.
People? Okay. Yeah, about hiring cars, or it could be chocolate fountain. It could be a 360 booth.
Yeah.
I reckon, you know, after a... I'm going to ramble a bit now, but... I've always found that after a client books their venue, the next thing they do is go to book their DJ.
Yeah.
And then they always ask their DJ for recommendations. And I'm sure a lot of other DJs will relate to this.
Yeah.
And then you always think to yourself, well, I'm being asked this question. I've been asked about decor. I've been asked about catering, all this quite often.
Hmm.
Should I get into it, or should I maybe become like an events planner or something?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, we have tried our hand in it. Events management, events planning and stuff, but I just reckon it's a lot of work, and sometimes what tends to happen is when you try and get yourself into too many things, your focus kind of goes away from your main thing.
Yeah,
so
fair point.
What I don't want to do is obviously sort of
dilute.
Not concentrate on
dilute what you're actually
exactly dilute
yeah,
what I'm trying to
yeah,
do
what so. You actually do so
exactly yeah
so just rewinding slightly you said that your mum was an entertainer as well, a vocalist entertainer. How does she look at your career now, and what pride level do you think she's at on a scale of 1 to 10 for what you've achieved?
I think any parent would be absolutely proud of their son or daughter's achievements.
Yeah.
And she's extremely proud. I mean, she was at a recent event where I was, and she was saying, you know, how she really thoroughly enjoyed the performance and how far I've got. And I just think that smile you can see on your parents' faces when they see you performing.
That's lovely.
It's amazing. I mean, just my 4-year-old, for example, when he achieves something or comes back with a certificate from school, I'm the happiest.
I'm
the happiest. And I'm thinking, well, my parents must be feeling the same or must have felt the same back then. So I reckon, you know, it's a great feeling from both sides.
So she wouldn't prefer that you were an archaeologist then?
I guess not. Maybe digging up bones and stuff. Maybe in another life.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, man. Well, listen, thank you so much. I really, really do appreciate your time.
Andy.
And thank you for coming on. And I hope when you hear this back that we've managed to cut out some of the ramble that I got into. So.
No,
cheers,
that's
man.
Fine, Andy. Thank you very much once again for the opportunity. Great, and I'll see you at the next wedding.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Cheers. Well, there we go. A fascinating insight, I think, into the world of MK Roadshow. Thanks to Kunal for getting in touch and wanting to be a part of it. Always pleased that people are. Similarly, I keep banging this drum, but if you'd like to take part, please do get in touch. Andy@jibztv.com, JIBZTV.com, or contact me via Facebook Messenger or Instagram, possibly as well. Looking forward to the next episode. We've got a real industry heavyweight who's given up a little bit of his time to come and talk to me. And I think you'll find it fascinating. Mr. Atul Lakhani from IXL Events and, of course, Sanjay Foods. So I've already recorded it, and I know that you'll find that one very interesting. So please join me next time on the Wedding Professionals podcast. Thanks very much. See you soon.